Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
And so then we started the process and we agreed that foster adopt was the way to go. One, because our mission of serving the world, right? And so that these are kids who have been through some hard times and that are harder to adopt. Mm-hmm. And also, what a lot of people don't know is that when you go through foster adoption, it's not only free, but they pay you a stipend as a foster parent. And so right. Being both nonprofit workers, it was a cost-effective way for us to build a family.
Hello, welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie, and I'm your host, and you are tuning in to the show whose mission in the world is to highlight, uplift, normalize, and celebrate our LGBTQIA+ families and all their beautiful identities. And I've got a really great interview lined up for you. Ed Center came on to talk about his family, he and his husband. They like to say, lovingly and comically, that they basically flipped the script on the foster to adopt story. And it's a really beautiful story. That's all I'm going to say about that. Ed also is a parenting coach, and he just recently started a company called Village Well Parenting. And I got a little parental coaching from him as well. And you're going to have to tune in later this week to my social media to hear how the goals we set out, me and Ed together for my parenting journey, are turning out. Spoiler alert, I've had some fails. Not gonna lie. All right. Also, one big thing, huge thing. I have to thank our newest Patreoners. A huge thank you to Greer. I feel like I want to say it fancy because you are so fancy, Greer. Greer, thank you so much. And Katie, mwah. Thank you, y'all. It's always going to mean the world to me that you still are joining my Patreon community and you're helping me get this show out to more and more people. So thank you. If you want to join my Patreon, you just go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast, find a tier that works for you, and you're going to get that bonus content, y'all. You're also going to help a good cause. It takes a village, does it not? Okay, I have other huge freaking news before I roll the tape. The Queer Family Podcast, y'all. I need like a drum roll, please, has just been named Signal Award finalist in 3 categories. Y'all, I can't even, listen, we've been nominated before. We've even won some awards on this little hair show. These nominations mean so much to me. So we are nominated in the family and child raising category, the LGBTQ category, of course, and the listener's choice category. Now, here's why this feels like such a big freaking deal to me. Every award we've ever been recognized for or any accolade we've ever gotten has been in LGBTQ realm, right? It's always been to acknowledge that we are a part of the LGBTQ community. And the amount of times I have gotten told by folks in the know or folks with the power that this content is just too niche for mainstream listeners. It's just such a niche little thing. It's so niche. Nobody's ready to hear that. The amount of times I've heard that has driven me so bonkers and crazy. And so to get the acknowledgement and to be in the family and child raising category, look, there's a siren outside because it's such a big deal. Y'all, like the other podcasts in this category are all told through a heteronormative lens, you know? And this is the only podcast. I feel like this is the only parenting podcast, besides maybe a handful that I know about, that are telling fertility journeys, parenting journeys, all the things related to family from a non-heteronormative viewpoint, perspective, point of view. And I want to win that shiznit. I really do. I really do. I want to prove to those in power that queer families and queer-centric conversations deserve a real important seat at the table. So here's what I need you to do in order to boost my numbers even more. What you're going to do, you just have to do a little voting. I know I ask you to do so much, but this one is really special to me. So all you have to do is go to signalaward.com/voting#. Or you know what you can do? You can just go to the link in the show notes because it'll be there right now. Go do that. You just stop what you're doing. I don't care if you're driving. Stop. And go do the voting and find me in all the categories and vote. And if you have trouble, reach out to me and I will walk you through it. Because like I said, I want to win this. I really do. I really do. Anyways, it means the world. Okay. One last thing before I roll this tape. Please don't forget to vote. No, just kidding. One last thing. A couple weeks ago, I asked for our allies who listen to reach out and talk a little bit about why they listen and what they get out of the show. And we got a good number of responses. And one of them was from Brian, who has been a listener for quite some time. I've seen Brian on the social and Brian's written to me a couple times. And Brian wrote this message and I just want to read it to you. He writes, although I came out as gay 45 years ago and been identifying as queer about half that time, I identify as an ally to queer building family communities, QBF. There are many reasons why I've never had any interest in having or raising children, but of course I support queers who do. Whether it's an issue of bodily autonomy, full equality, or the expectation that parents raising kids with intention will bring a better world. And of course, intersectionality, the struggles of QBF matter, just as those of our trans siblings, agreed, and other minorities, agreed, of which I'm not a part, he says. The Queer Family Podcast is my weekly education, feeding my inner nerd and my need to keep learning and growing, with frequent reminders of the strength and resilience within the queer community. Brian, thank you so much for that heartfelt response, and what an interesting ally response. And you are an ally, although you are queer yourself. So if you got anything you want to send in, please send an email to thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com or call us and leave a voicemail at 646-470-1840 or reach out via DM. I'm everywhere you can possibly find me, Queer Family Podcast, across all the socials. All right, so it's time to roll the tape. I have yammered on way too long. Please don't forget to vote. Don't forget to vote. Don't forget to vote. How many times can I say it? Don't forget to vote, y'all. Signalaward.com. I love you. Thank you for tuning in. And let's show those in power that queer-centric stories deserve a seat at the goddamn table. Thank you so much. Helen and Beulah, my lovely fake assistants, and Nicole, who actually does things for me. Roll that tape, will you? Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Ed.
Hello.
I am so happy to see you here. Listeners at home, let's be real. We've already been chatting for a good 10 minutes because we
trying to figure out the sound.
Well, the sound, we had some technical issues. And then also we have something in common, San Francisco.
Yes, absolutely. I was almost your high school teacher.
I mean, could have been.
Yeah. I mean, there were three things that needed to shift, but yeah.
You really did teach at the school I was zoned for that I didn't go
yes.
to.
Yes.
Which is funny. So we've been connecting over the San Francisco thing. I am so also happy to be with you because you're fun to talk to, A. And also your story, I can't wait to dive in. This is a beautiful story, your whole family building journey. And then, you know, what you've done since then. It's just, mwah. So
thank you.
My God. All right. So without further ado, so I don't butcher your story for you, let's have you, Ed, give us your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Family Podcast. I'm going to put my timer up, but I will never cut you off. You know this.
Okay.
You listen to the show.
I do.
Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
Here we go. So The most important identity I have right now is as a husband and a father. So my husband and I created our family through foster adopt, and we adopted two boys who are biological brothers. We call ourselves the House of Eight Balls. And and my second son was an unplanned gay pregnancy. So if you want to ask about that later, you can. And my other identities that are important to me are I am half Filipino. I am from Hawaii, which is my primary cultural identification. I consider myself a social justice warrior. And I am one of the new converts to pickleball. I'm a parent, coach, and educator. And I will stop my pitch there. How'd I do on time?
Oh, you went over. You did. But that's okay, because everybody does. And you really do have a lot to share, honestly. Right? I feel like we didn't even touch on a huge aspect of your story too, which we're going to dig into as well. No, you have a lot to share and it's really exciting. You're a family. I'm in love.
Warning, nobody has ever accused me of being pithy. So your editor has their work cut out for them.
You got this, Gerson. You got this. Oh, this is going to be amazing. Also, I just wanted to add, you are a listener and you mm-hmm. have told me, Ed, that you would like to sing the jingle with me. And I think
I do. This is like my fantasy is I want to sing the jingle. Warning, like, it's not like I have talent. I just feel like we can do this.
Okay. I'm so down with this.
Okay.
But you just want to do the very end, right?
We're going to do the last line, queer family podcast. And then I want love is love. If that's all right with you. I mean, this is your show. You can do what you want.
I love everything about this right now. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yes.
A 5, 6, 7, 8.
The queer family podcast. Love is love.
That might be one of my favorite moments of the season right there.
Definitely, but not for your listeners.
No, it was amazing. You know what? We're on a delay, so it's really hard to sing together. So every listener has to take that into account. Can't really sing together on this virtual world. So there's that.
Okay, so my fantasy check. Thanks for having me. It's been a great time.
This is going smashingly. Okay, let's dive into your story. So you are half Filipino. You were raised in Hawaii. And that's a really important part of who you are.
Yeah, I think it kind of set my foundational identity and things associated with that multiculturalism, love of the ocean, having a big, loud family. Those things kind of really set values, how I see the world, and also, you know, some of the wounds and hardships that I carry as well.
So I just wanted to set the stage with that first, because I know this story, like you said on the phone with me, that you and your husband kind of joke that you kind of flipped the script when it comes to adoption. And that's, listeners, you're going to find out what Ed means by that, because it's actually really beautiful. So can we actually just take it back to just you and your husband, the beginning of your journey and how you came to, what was the conversation surrounding family building and things like that?
So I met my husband I think I was 32, and he's 3 years younger than me, 4 years younger than me. Very early on in our dating, we had that conversation around values, around family. Like, do you want kids, right? That tester conversation. And we both agreed that we wanted to have children and that we wanted to create our family through adoption. And for me, because I was an educator, I knew that I could love other people's kids. And so I didn't need to feel a biological connection. And then also from a like social justice perspective, because he works in nonprofit and is very social justice focused, like this was part of how we could build a family, but also how we can contribute to the world, right? That there are kids out there that need homes. And so we decided that early on and then went about our dating life, our connection life, our moving in together, all of that. And then at some point, I think I was 38, and he said, do you want to have kids? And I said, yes, we've been through this. And he said, well, your clock is ticking. So
you better get on it.
Right? I did the math and I was thinking, you know, I want to have a life after the main part of child rearing, right? And so I wanted to imagine this life where I'm going out to fabulous brunches, wearing my chiffon and pearls, and I'm not worried about babysitters, right? And so I said, okay, it's time. And so then we started the process and we agreed that foster adopt was the way to go. One, because our mission of serving the world, right? And so that these are kids who have been through some hard times and that are harder to adopt. Mm-hmm. And also, what a lot of people don't know is that when you go through foster adoption, it's not only free, but they pay you a stipend as a foster parent. And so right. Being both nonprofit workers, it was a cost-effective way for us to build a family.
Right. As two folks, as I like to say, who don't have mm-hmm. uteruses, mm-hmm. family building, it can be a much more expensive process when yes. at least even one of you has a uterus, right?
Yes. So we decided to go through that process. And the whole time, so he's Filipino also, and mm-hmm. we saw ourselves as building a brown family, whatever that right. means. And then we went into the pool and we had some close calls, if you will, where we thought we were going to get matched with a kid and then it didn't happen. Mm. And then there was this baby whose name surfaced a few times. Mm-hmm. And at first, honestly, his health file was too scary.
In what way?
He was born very premature with a lot of complications of poverty. He had, 28 to 30 weeks. Gestation. Oh, wow. So really early. And so there were all of these potential problems that we didn't feel we were able to support, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so we didn't pursue it then. And then a few months later, the name came up again and we looked further into it and a lot of those potential problems had not panned out, right?
Oh,
and
okay.
So he seemed to be doing thriving.
Mm.
And so I actually took the file to a friend of mine who's a pediatrician and he looked it over and he said, this is your son. Go get him. He's going to be fine.
He was a newborn at this point or?
He was 5 months old at this point.
And he was in a foster, like a temporary foster place.
Correct. Okay. Correct. With an amazing woman who only fosters medically fragile babies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she has these huge arms from carrying babies all the time. And so we met him and frankly, we're surprised that he was Caucasian.
Right.
Because all of the stories of poverty and lacking and trauma, we made some assumptions. And then we found this and discovered ourselves with this white baby boy and fell in love. And so he moved in a few weeks later and we built our family. I have a side story, which is that early on, we went to the pediatrician and she said, do you have any questions? I said, I have a question. And my husband said, please don't, please don't, please don't. And I said, no, you know, all questions are valid. And the pediatrician agreed. And I said, I'm really sorry. We're both dark brown. We don't know anything about white babies. I can see his veins through his skin. Is he not fully cooked?
Oh, and your husband was like, and you did.
Mortified, right? And she said, that is normal. Okay. His skin will thicken, but you want to use lots of sunscreen on this baby. Yes, and good to know.
That's true, yeah.
So, that was part of my cultural education.
So this is why we said you kind of flipped the script.
Yes. So we are both Asians and we adopted a white baby. So we flipped that script. I also have Korean adoptee cousins. So they thought that was hilarious. And we were cool with one kid for a while.
Yeah. Oh, I have one question surrounding the adoption. The birth parents' parental rights already been terminated? Like, was this a program where it's definitely only kids who are there to stay, or does that exist actually? Because I just know that with foster to adopt, sometimes you have to have really thick skin because they might go home.
Right.
Or not home. Back
to Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So no, parental rights were not terminated. And that was, you know, scary as hell for us. Because here we are bonding with this baby and falling in love and really claiming ourselves as a family unit. And there's this possibility that could happen. His birth parents, his birth mother did terminate parental rights. Mm-hmm. And so that made us feel in the clear. And then the adoption went through a year later. And so that made us feel very secure.
Okay.
That's a worry. And then we know stories of families who have connected with their babies and then were not able to adopt them. And that's so emotionally devastating.
Yes. I don't think that I would have thick enough skin for that, but I admire those who do because it's not easy. I mean, it could be great and it could not. It could be not great for the foster parents.
So we told ourselves as we moved into this that we would love this baby and build a family for as long as we had together. And that if there was heartbreak afterwards, that we would go through that heartbreak and we would help, my husband and I would help each other heal. But we would know that we had given our full love to that baby in the meantime. And so that was our commitment. And we were very fortunate that we didn't have to face that ending. Ugh.
Yeah. All right. So you finally adopted your son when he was, how old was he?
I guess he was a year and a half when the adoption went through.
It takes a while.
Yeah, it took about a year, and apparently that's short because we didn't have any birth family contesting the process, right? And so, but a year felt long.
I can imagine. And now I know you have so much more to tell, and I just have so many questions. So if you want to just barrel, if you want to steamroll me, go ahead. But my question, and I think you were probably going to go here, is did you have contact with the birth mother? Did you meet the birth mother?
We did not meet the birth mother. We're open to that and are still open to that. And she has not shown interest, at least to us, in doing that. I've never met her. I think she's still in a place of life that is very hard and would be very challenging for her to put all the things in place in order to meet her biological kid. But the door is open. We have been very fortunate that we were able to establish contact with his birth father a couple years ago. And his birth father did not know that he had this child. And it has been lovely. I know that sounds like the scary part to a story. The birth father is also in very challenging circumstances. And so he's thrilled that his birth son has us. And he is looking forward to establishing a relationship in the future. And yeah. And so we're waiting until our son says he's fully ready. He knows that it's there. The possibility is there. And also his birth father's communication with us goes in and out. So he might not communicate with us for a while. And so that's something that we need to roll with and figure it out.
Yeah. So many layers, as is usually the case with our families. All right. So keep going.
We were happy with one kid, but we're having thoughts about having a girl. And this time we were definitely going to have a girl of color.
Right.
To the point that just in case, I started watching black hair tutorials on YouTube. Because I was going to get ready as much as I could. Right. And then we got a call from a social worker saying we have a Caucasian baby boy who's 6 weeks old. And then going through, and I was saying, what? Why are we having this conversation? We're having a girl. Right. What is this? And she said, oh, I forgot to say, he's your son's biological brother.
Oh my God.
Then we met him the next day, and he moved in with us 5 days later.
Oh,
so that was my unplanned gay pregnancy.
You had an unplanned gay pregnancy. That's the best. Yes. And they're quick. They're quick, those
Yes.
quick gestational turnaround.
Yes. And so now, knock on wood, the House of Eight Balls is complete. Like, I'm happy to be done. I'm not fully in control here, but like, we feel good with four. I'm not putting any other fertile energy into the universe.
How old are they now?
12 and 6.
Okay. All right. Well, we're close, you and I. I got a 9 and a 5. I got a Dolly Parton 9 to 5.
Yes, you do.
So how's life going?
Life is going right now in this specific period particularly well.
Okay.
You know, all parenting is ups and downs and cycles. And as we'll get into later, our downs have been down. Mm-hmm. And right now we are in a phase where the kids are going to school on time. There's a minimum of complaints around that. Both kids are doing really well socially. So things are rolling along in a really lovely way right now. I don't kid myself that that'll go forever. And it's still hard, as all your listeners know. But we're doing pretty well right now. And that's coming off of, you know, some periods of real challenge and intensity, I would say, for us as a family.
Why don't we kind of segue into that? Because you're doing something amazing now because of what you went through, which is kind of how my podcast was born too. I went through some a tough time, and then I did this to like heal from my tough time. So,
yes. So I realized that I've been making a mistake on this podcast. So my older kiddo came out as they, them, and non-binary a few months ago. Oh, and okay. I have been misgendering them on this podcast. So like, I'm in the transition moment. So like, feel free to correct me. And non-binary listeners, please understand that like, I'm fully accepting, but on my journey of transitioning my language. So there's that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So my older kiddo, during the quarantine part of the pandemic, when we went to virtual school, was not going to work for them. Mm. And so we now understand they have ADHD and dyslexia, and it was going to be too difficult. But I'm an educator.
Right.
And so I was like, I got 25 teenagers at one time, one kid on Zoom, no problem.
Right.
And I was not equipped for it. And I should not have been the one pushing him forward in a way that he was really not ready for or wired for.
Right. I am loving hearing you say this from an educator's point of view, because I'm same with you. My daughter, my 9-year-old, ADHD as well. But we didn't know at the time. And then the pandemic, the lockdown was when we really, really said like, okay, we have to figure out what is going on, because it was so difficult. It was such a nightmare trying to force her to get on these Zooms and do the work. And we weren't equipped. We were not equipped. And my wife is an educator as well. So I just love hearing you say that. Thanks.
It was so effing hard.
It's impossible.
And in retrospect, what I should, and I'm giving myself tons of grace, I did the best I could, right? But in retrospect, I should have said, hey, school, we ain't doing this, right? And gone to my child and said, you have to learn one thing that you're passionate about, ukulele, juggling, whatever. And then we're going to spend lots of time connecting and going outside, and you're going to learn your damn times tables. That's it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it would have given us a very different journey. So the difficulty of virtual school was part of it. I also think the terror that we were experiencing at the time was so triggering for him. And then also, we have been blessed with an extended family of mostly queer folks who really show up as aunties and uncles for my kids, and also an amazing school community, like his after school program in person was so supportive and helpful. And all of a sudden that's cut off.
Right.
Right. And so I think that that was all impetus for what was already, if you will, kind of kindling from his early childhood trauma, early infancy trauma, which we now know affects how the brain is wired. And so he went on an incredibly hard, dark mental health journey. And at first, I didn't understand that it was a mental health issue. I thought that he was just being extra stubborn and really aggressive. Right. And so like he was really refusing to do schoolwork or follow directions or do chores or anything. And so what I did was I got very involved in power struggles with him. Right. And I was like, you are not going to cross this line. You think you can get away with this stuff? No, I am going to show you who's boss, make you do the work, push you on the writing, the math, this and that.
Been there.
Right.
And they've done that many times. Yes.
And his aggression got greater and my aggression got greater to the point where neither of us was going to back down. But his behavior turned into cussing me out, throwing things. We were afraid for his little brother. We got a safe for the knives in the house. He was breaking holes in the walls. He painted a wall black. I don't even know where he got the paint. And so just all of this stuff to the point where I had to realize, oh, shit, this is not willfulness. This is not defiance. This is him going into a very dark, scary place for all of us. And so the great news is we found incredible support, a whole team of people, therapists who were coming to our house masked pre-vaccination.
Oh, wow.
Right. To be able to work with us, people who would come at 10, 11 at night when he was having an episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was I remember this one night where I asked him to brush his teeth before he could have more screen time. He refused and had a 3-hour fit screaming because of that. There's a sign that it's mental illness, right? Because the 2-minute job of brushing your teeth gets you TV time, but you're engaging, not choosing, in a 3-hour meltdown. His crisis therapist came over, and by the time she came over, were calmer. And then I opened the door for the therapist, and she came in, pulled out her toothbrush, and said, "I brought my toothbrush, race you." And they like ran over to the bathroom and brushed their teeth. And then she like talked to him, calmed him down. And then I was like, "You're amazing." And also, F you.
Exactly. I was going to say, fuck you. So you can say, I was going to say, listen, I've been working on this for 3 hours. Fuck you.
Yes. And you come in and you get to do the closing. Like, what the hell?
Oh, God. Oh, God. But it's also like one of those things where the veil is lifted, right? Where
you're Yes. So he got this incredible support. He's thriving now.
We'll be right back.
Podcast, love is love.
We all want our best friends to be happy, but how far would you go to help? Introducing Tiny Huge Decisions from Chalk and Blade and APM Studios, a new limited series that follows longtime best friends Mawson and Dahlia as they make a relationship-altering choice. Will she be the gestational surrogate for Mawson and his husband? Eavesdrop and find out what choice they'll make with Tiny Huge Decisions. Available wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Love is love.
So you got the support you needed. And then what?
So we got the support we needed for him, right? And that gave me space to realize that I needed support for me. And that my parenting skills were not meeting the moment. And I needed things that would work with him. So like work to help calm him down, work to help him manage the world without getting into power struggles and without me being triggered.
Yeah.
And so I went out and so I found this whole field of positive parenting, mm-hmm. which has some great tools and techniques that I really aligned with because I was an educator and a lot of it looks like great classroom management practices. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to apply this stuff and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So it didn't work for a few reasons. So one is that so much of it is based on connection with your child. I was connecting with my kid when we were both regulated, but when we were dysregulated, that was not shifting our interaction, mm-hmm. right? And so like more special time, if you will, right? That one-on-one connection was not going to shift what was going on.
Right.
Two, so much of the teaching was very didactic. You do this, 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 and this, and life gets better.
Right.
And all the parenting educators and coaches are white women. Mm-hmm. And so while I could see the value in there, I was having to translate everything for my queer, brown, trauma-informed on multiple ways family, right? Mm-hmm. And it was too hard. And then the third thing is you can't apply tools if you're not calm yourself as a parent. And that is deep work, right? Oh, God. All of the parenting education acknowledges that, but they don't give tools and skills enough, in my opinion.
No.
And so what I had to do was take some of that stuff, which I think was really good, but do some deep work to understand why does my kid screaming make me fly off the handle? What's that about? Right.
Oh,
and so there
I'm
were
afraid
some really
to unearth any of this.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing though. This is part of what I want to shift because we all have wisdom from our families, right? We all inherited amazing cultural wisdom. And we also all have wounds, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so I want to destigmatize those wounds because we all have it, mm-hmm. right? And our parents, most of our parents did the best that they could mm-hmm. and they fucked up somehow.
Of course.
Right?
Right.
And so now our job is to do the best we can and at least fuck up in different ways.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, true.
And so a very common one that I understand now is that my mom held a framework that some feelings are good and some feelings are bad. Mm. And we would reward good feelings and bad emotions were to be stifled, muffled, suppressed. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What I want to do for my kids is say all feelings are valid. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Anger, hate, lust, those are all super valid. And there are appropriate ways of expressing them and inappropriate ways of expressing. So you can feel hatred towards me. You cannot throw things at me.
Right.
Right. And so like, mm-hmm. how do we create a different space? Right. And mm-hmm. so the wounds that I need to unpack are that I have some emotions internally that I feel like are off limits. And I have to do the work to shift that mindset for myself so that I can appropriately articulate and support my kids when they're having a temper tantrum or when they are feeling something that is anxiety or perfectionism or whatever. And I can say, hey, that's cool. I get it. Right. And like, you can't flip me off. You can't punch your brother. You can't scream at your teachers, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's work on building those skills. And we can do that when we're calm, right?
Right.
And so the work is figuring out first how to, there are temporary things that you can do to interrupt, right? So like taking a deep breath, like mindfulness, like a 5-second pause, like a mantra, right? And then there's also the deeper work of, I'm now going to understand the wounds that I inherited from my family. I'm going to create space to work on those. And then I'm going to do the healing work in service of myself and my kids.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of work.
It's so much work.
It is. It is. But like,
as if we're not busy enough.
Exactly. We're juggling so many things
as
parents.
Yeah.
But, you know, for instance, I'm just going to take it to a scenario from this morning. Me and my daughter, like, she's good at ramping up. She's good at getting loud and the things get thrown, right? So we go there. And mm-hmm. when it happens, it needs to run its course. It needs to mm-hmm. run its course, right? Mm-hmm. And we have skills for dealing with that and things like that. But what also sometimes happens is if one of us gets ramped up, if I get ramped up, she goes above us, even if she's not even ramped up, right? So it's some kind of a trigger thing. So yep. This morning, I'm like, I told you to put your shoes on, guys. We are 10, you know, I'm ramping up because it's day two of school and we've mm-hmm. been late both days. So I'm mm-hmm. ramping up. She automatically takes it. And I said to her, I said, don't you escalate right now. I am escalating.
It's mama's turn.
I said, don't you escalate. No. We're not going there. Don't you? Because I know if she escalates also, I'm in it. I'm in it for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, but it's also just like, I'm ramped up right now and I'm escalated and I don't you dare. You know, I don't even know. I'm just bringing it to that. You can give me advice if you want, or you can tell me, you know, whatever you want to tell me on that. I'm not asking you to give me advice.
I want to actually walk you through this. Can I?
Okay. Yeah. Walk me through. And this is a teeny tiny thing. Like this is the, yes. you know, but this is what happened this morning.
Well, it's teeny tiny, but it also triggered you, right? Because you got escalated. Right?
To the point where my five-year-old, as we're walking out the door, was like, mom, all you have to do is take three deep breaths, mom.
That's amazing.
I was like, I will. When we get to the bus stop, I mm-hmm. will. mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so good. Yes. Okay. So here is the gift around these triggers, all right? So the gift is they happen in predictable moments, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? So every parent listening has a get out the door story from this week.
Yeah, totally. Right? 100%.
Right? So getting out the door sucks. So let's just acknowledge that. It's also predictable. You know that when you're going out the door, that there's going to be difficulty. And so what I want to encourage you to do is reframe from my daughter is testing my authority, making life difficult for me, screwing everything up. Two, my daughter does not yet have the skills mm-hmm. to get ready on time on her own.
Right.
Right. And so if we shift it to that, then it's a skill building opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when we do that, it can become easier to like be in that moment. And remember, for kids, transitions are skills. Frustration tolerance is a skill. Filtering our language is a skill, right? Mm-hmm. And we know many adults that don't have these skills, right?
100%.
And so we're going to build these skills in our kids. And so for you, seeing that for your daughter, right? And the thing that's hard is in order to build the skill with her, I want you to be more present during that time. And being present during the last 10 minutes of getting out the door is fucking hard, right? Because you have 12 things going on,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And so if you can figure out how to stop the other things that you're doing, checking that email, texting me to see if I can come to this podcast, all of those things to be focused and present with your daughter to support her through that mm-hmm. time. If she is connected with you and being guided and supported, and then you can gamify, right? I'll mm-hmm. race you to put your shoes on.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
With my 6-year-old, mm-hmm. it's like whoever is out the door in 30 seconds gets a piggyback ride.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Or it's, I notice I told you a minute ago to put your shoes on and you haven't started yet. What's your plan to get started? Right?
And keeping the tone out. That's the hard part.
Because you're building the skills.
Yes.
Right. And so we can't always do that because sometimes we are doing 12 things at one time. Mm-hmm. Right. But I have this whole course it's a single session class for parents called You Suck at Giving Directions. Mm-hmm. Right. Because most of us are giving directions while we're multitasking on the side, yes. and our kids just are tuning us out. And so if we can be present, right, and connect, and then like, okay, these are the things we need to do. Mm-hmm. Right? It will change the game of your morning routine.
Here's what I love about what you just walked me through and the listeners. we've been with a therapist that works with her for quite some time now. And it's a lot of it falls on us to, with this therapist, to create the reward charts. And are you following through with the reward chart? And are you following through with this? And what I like about what you're saying is, hold on, slow down, get it present, and really focus on the connection, which is something that is so obvious, right? But also so hard to think of in the moment. I'll be like, oh, okay, the reward chart, I fell back on the reward chart, and that's why, you know, and it's just such a more accessible and switch of mind frame that I really like and appreciate. And I see the benefit.
In my experience also, reward charts work for about 2 weeks.
Exactly. Right?
So reward charts work if there's a specific behavior that you want to shift, right? And so doing chores, right? It's a new chore. A reward chart is great to establish the pattern of that behavior, right? But the novelty of that reward is going to fade. Your implementation of that reward is going to fade, right? So all of those things. So recognize it as a like specific tactic for the beginning of a new behavior. Reward charts don't build skills. They create extrinsic motivation, right?
Yes.
And
this
your
is
daughter,
how I feel.
Right. Your daughter right now does not have intrinsic motivation around school, and you can't really do anything about that. That's beyond your control. So if you can build the skill, right? So I'm going to be with you 15 minutes before we leave, or here's a chart of the different things to do. Like, can you tell me when you've checked the chart? Right? Those types of things so that you are actually building her skills to be able to get out the door.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's also going on, right? So our kids are not getting ready on time. We're not ready on time. Never. We have all these other things to do. Our caffeine hasn't fully kicked in. We need to use the bathroom one more time. And then also, if we don't get the kids out the door on time, we might be late to that next meeting, which means I'm not an adequate professional. And everybody else in the world is able to get kids off to school and then get a job. How come I can't do... Ooh, I need to take a deep breath just saying that, right?
Yeah, it's a lot.
And like, it's a lot. And so if we can take that off, right? And like, if your kids are late a few times to school, it's okay.
And this I know too, because I am like, I'm late everywhere, first of all. So it doesn't make any sense. It's not surprising that we're late out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, and I also am the one to tell my wife all the time, oh my God, it's fine. It's fine. We're fine. It's okay that we're late. But when it comes to, and it's, you already hit the nail on the head with it. When it comes to, it's, I've asked you 10 times to get those shoes. It's when it comes to that, I get frustrated with their lack of follow through or their non-ability to self-regulate. And that's not fair to them. You're right. You're right.
I have another question. Is your wife home in the morning? Is she involved in the process? Okay.
And that's purposely designed because she cannot stand being late at all.
Okay.
And at least I can like take it to a certain degree.
Yes.
So if there are any chinks in the link towards getting out the door, it just ends up like being a really bad situation for everyone.
Right, right.
So I tell, even when we're on the weekends, I tell Anne, I'm like, Anne, just go downstairs and wait for us, please. Just because you're just making it worse right now for me. Right, you're stressing me out because I can see that you're getting stressed, right? So,
Okay. So one of the suggestions I wanted to make is that if there are two parents at home at a particular moment in time and one parent starts to escalate, right? For the other parent to be able to get in that space and take over, right?
Yeah.
And it can be hard because when you're escalating, you are in a power struggle and it feels like losing to step back, right? And so my husband and I, in the pandemic, we developed this code where if your spouse says the code word, you must stand down.
We do a tap out. Like, you want me to tap in? You want me to tap in? And
great.
And as soon as one of us says that to the other, 99 times out of 100, we will say, yes, tap in.
Our code word was, why don't you go make us cocktails? So it was a little weird at 7 a.m. when we were saying that to each other. But, you know, it was the pandemic. All the rules were different.
Everything was off. Yeah, everybody was just making cocktails at 7 a.m. Weren't you? Yeah, no, really. But I want to say something, and this is queer-centric. I do feel like queer couples in general, queer parents in general who are partnered up together, I feel like, and I'm speaking out of my ass, to be quite honest, but I really think we do better at this than our straight counterparts because we're intrinsically more motivated to share everything 50-50 in some ways. I mean, I know personally, I was so set on sharing everything 50-50 because my wife gave birth to our first. And I was like, well, you have the bio connection. So I just feel like there's something to that queer. And I could be totally wrong. And y'all can write
in. No, you're right.
You know,
you're right. I have empirical evidence from working with 20 queer families. But here's what I think it is. When you are in a queer relationship, so often that is same sex, but it could be, you know, other iterations, right?
Yes.
You don't have a heteronormative type that defines your parenting.
Exactly.
And so you need to go basically line by line in terms of responsibilities, right?
Exactly.
And so I feel like the cishet families that I work with, they are all reacting to a normal type. It doesn't mean they keep it, right? But that framework exists, right?
They haven't been forced to challenge the mold.
Right. And so the classic one that I see in my cishet families is that dads are stepping up these days and do more work and they do chores and they pick up kids and this and that. Mom holds the entire mental load of when the school holidays are and what costume needs to be had for what performance and snacks, right? Like that January, we need to start thinking about summer camp, right? Mm-hmm. That is held by most of the moms that I work with in cishet families, and it's stressful.
Yes.
Right?
My wife and I share those across
the
board.
Yes. Right. And so my husband is actually the one who holds more of the mental load, but I try to grab things in chunks so he doesn't have to think about them. Extracurricular activities for the kids.
Same.
Right.
This is literally me and my wife. Same.
Right. And so it is, I think, so valuable to be able to have that opportunity to do a line-by-line analysis of how we're going to show up in parenting that is connected to the needs of the kids, but also our natural strengths rather than gender patterns. I try to encourage more of my cishet clients to do the same.
Yeah. I mean, listen, what I'm hearing from you is the queers are winning. I'm just kidding. No, this has really been very insightful. And I really appreciate your approach and your thoughts on this because it takes a village and this shit is hard. This shit is hard. And there's no getting around that. I'm going to go into Monday morning with a new plan.
All right.
And this is the first time that I have spoken to somebody who's helped me with my parenting that I'm like, okay, yeah, I actually like this. And I don't feel talked down to. I know how to get in touch with my emotions. Like I went to fucking theater school. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to explain to me how to breathe deep. I know how to do that. You don't have to explain to me how to find feelings inside. That's fine. I got that. I laid on a floor and felt my feelings for four years in college. You know what I mean? So I hate it when a therapist or some will talk to me about getting in touch with myself. I know how to do that. I do. I probably could do it more, which I understand that. But I don't know. Something about what you just gave to me is it has clicked. And I'm like, okay, this is something I can implement easily.
Girl. Can I girl you?
Yes. <please. laughs>
Okay. You can girl me. So Monday morning, I want you to take a minute and get into character.
Okay.
For the transition, right?
Yeah.
I want you to tap into your theater skills like, I'm going to get into character as chill, present mom who is not swayed by anything. And you cannot phase me. And I'm going to be like friendly up in your business and we're going to get things done and get out the door on time. And if it's not on time, that's part of the play. So just roll. That's the improv. Roll with it.
And I can do that. And I can do that. And I've done that, you know, many times. But the missing piece, I think, for me was the 10 minutes or 15 minutes before.
Yeah.
That missing piece where it's imperative
yeah.
that I am 100%, and it's hard, but my goal is to be 100% focused with my children.
Mm-hmm.
That 10 minutes mm-hmm. before.
Yes.
For me, I feel like that's going to be the key.
It's going to be key. It's going to be transformative. And also, I teach this and I fuck it up all the time. And so give yourself grace when it doesn't work or you forget or whatever, right? Like, that's so important. We do the best we can.
It just reminded me of last night, my son, 5-year-old, needed to draw me a picture at bedtime, you know, as they do. And I was being really like, of course, yes, let's draw the picture. It was the first day of school yesterday. I was like super chill about it. He spent extra time drawing the picture. We talked about it and we were talking about his flower that he drew and he colored it. And he said, I'm sorry, Mom, I colored out of the lines. I said, I love that. That's my favorite part of it. I love mistakes. You love mistakes? You know, so we had a whole conversation about the mistakes. And but then so this
so
morning.
Beautiful.
This morning, when I'm starting to ramp up, my son goes, but Mom, you said you love mistakes. We just made a mistake. Like,
you were like, I was trying to teach you growth mindset in that moment. We're talking about me getting out the door now.
Literally, like they will throw it at you. They're sponges. But yeah, you just reminded me. He totally said that. Mom, you said you love mistakes. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, it was breathe deep, Mom, breathe deep. So...
Ours is, so I said I'm trying to teach my kids that all emotions are valid and also like name behaviors, not label kids. Mm-hmm. And we have this kitten and she's just bad. She's just bad. And so I'm always like, yeah, that cat is bad. And they're like, no, she's just making poor choices. And I'm
that's
like,
that's how you know
okay.
you're saying the right
okay,
stuff.
But she bad.
She's an asshole. That cat's an asshole,
you know,
right?
She yeah. knocked over a bottle of water on my laptop a couple
oh
months
my God.
Ago.
On purpose.
So I'm in a
on
new
purpose.
Laptop. Right?
Totally. Like that
I'm not
cat.
Trying to build her skills.
Oh my God. That's so funny because a constant mantra in our house is our dog is naughty. Like, oh my God, Kira's being naughty. She's so naughty. So the kids are like, Mom, Kira's being naughty.
Yes. The way our fixed mindsets move into our households, even against our own will.
Yeah. Oh my God. This has been amazing and lovely. And I just got free therapy. And I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Free parent coaching, not
right.
therapy.
Right. Okay. Yep. So let's dig into what you're doing now and how people can get in contact with you and what can we do?
I am on Instagram at Village Well Parenting. The organization I launched is called The Village Well. I am on TikTok at Queer Brown Dad. Mm-hmm. And my website is villagewellparenting.com. And so my focus, I should say, is on parents who have spirited children. So kids with big feelings and impulsive behaviors, right? We're both parenting because I was one of those kids.
Oh,
right?
Really? Yeah, my daughter
yeah.
is for sure.
Yeah, I was one of those kids and I felt like, you know, my parents doing the best that they could saw it as defiance when yeah. I was like, I just have these big feelings and I don't know what to do with them. And
right.
so they come out as these big behaviors. So now I help grownups understand those kids. And then I have a particular focus on parents of color. So that we can be grounded in folks' cultural references. So if that sounds like you, dear listener, then slide into my DMs. As the kids used to say, do the kids still say that? I don't even know.
I say it. I don't care.
Okay.
I also say I'm feeling some type of way because I love it. Just to be specific.
I used sus the other day and my 12-year-old glared at me.
That's like, out now?
I know, but I think I'm just not allowed to use it.
Oh, you're not. Yeah, you're totally
no.
not. No. I'm going to keep using these terms, though, as long as I live to my children. Even
yes.
when they're adults and they don't say the terms anymore, I'm going to know what the kids say. I'm going to say it to them.
Yes.
I'm going to just ruin my children's lives. Listen, if you're at home and this is, or in the car, wherever you are, this has resonated with you as it's resonated with me, reach out to Ed, because I said recently on the show that I only want like queer doctors. I only want queer therapists. I only want queer help, right? And I wonder if me connecting with you so well in this way has a big piece to do with the fact that we're both queer and we both speak that same language mm-hmm. in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it makes a difference.
I actually feel like one of the reasons I've fallen in love with your podcast is that while there are more queer parents out there, queer parents talking about parenting is still a fairly rare thing.
You never hear
right?
it.
No. And so like most of the circles that I run in where I'm talking about parenting are with cishet parents mm-hmm. through the soccer team or the school or whatever. And so to have this space where we get to hear queer parents tell their stories and their journeys through parenting has been such a joy for me to find to experience those stories for you. And so I'm happy to enhance or add to those stories. I also got to say, as a gay man, listening to all of these queer parenting stories, there's so much vagina on your podcast. I was like, wow, I have not like been privy to.
Oh, because you didn't go through a fertility journey either.
No. So no, like, no.
Even the gay men who come on my show who went through like surrogacy, they talk about vaginas all the time too.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've had any sort of relationship with vagina. So that's an extra perk for me listening to your show.
Oh, good. God, that's amazing. I'm so glad to be there for you. That's awesome. I try to balance it out with stories of all ilks.
You do a great job.
We try, but you know, vagina comes up a lot because that's where babies come from. Really.
Yes. Yes.
Well, this has really been such a pleasure, Ed. And, you know, reach out to Ed because I think, you know, Ed is doing such an amazing service. And we should all support queer creators and queer helpers and look for the helpers because they're out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was so much fun. Please have me on again in the future. I'll find other shit to talk about.
But I would love to. Well, you so might fun. Be here. I might be slipping in your DMs like Monday morning. But I'm like, I can't do it to Ed. I can't do it. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
but,
you got it. I know you got it.
But you might hear from me with more questions. Yeah, I don't think this is the end. You can be our parenting self-help expert. Look, I'm starting a whole new segment. Send us in your questions.
Heard it here first.
And I'll bring Ed back to answer them because you don't want me to give you advice. Trust me on that. Trust me. But this has been a pleasure and this is not the end. This is not goodbye. I look forward to counting you as a part of my helping community.
Awesome.
And a friend. Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Oh, my goodness.
Queer Family Podcast.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. If you did like it, go ahead and listen to another one. Or watch another one. We have so many for you to choose from. So just go click on one and do it. And also, don't forget that I do have merchandise. So if you love this show and you want to represent queer families in all our goodness, go to TeePublic.com/TheQueerFamilyPodcast and look at all the designs I have there and put them on any of the products that are in the store. They're all beautiful. And I'd love you to wear some of our merchandise. So just go ahead and do that. And thanks so much for tuning in yet again. And please keep tuning in. I'll see you next time. Thanks again.